You're listening to Buildipedia, your go-to podcast for everything you need to know about property. By covering the entire journey from buying your home through to design, building, selling, and everything in between, we'll help you fill in the blanks and bring your property vision to life.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Buildipedia. Today, a different sort of episode. We've decided to have a reboot episode, have a first episode redone. And I guess the main reason for that is because we've come a long way and the format's changed. And so we just thought we would do something different. And the first episode didn't make sense anymore. So there's a new episode and we're going to cheekily release it concurrently as a new episode, as an intro episode. And I've got a special guest, Angela Serene, good friend of mine, and officially the first professional journalist to be on the podcast. Welcome, Ange.
Hi.
So Ange is a friend of Buildipedia and a friend of Ballast Point. It'd be fair to say she's done some content for us in the past and she's doing a little bit of work for us. And I just thought, well, let's do an episode where we talk about Buildipedia because it's probably changed a little bit. And so it's a little bit different. Angela's going to ask a few questions and we're going to have a chat about what Buildipedia is, how it's come about, why are we here, and we'll go from there. So welcome, Ange.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
All right, you can ask questions now.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, first thing, I was just hoping you could give me a little bit of an overview about Buildipedia and what you're trying to achieve with it.
Well, it kind of changed a little bit. Initially, it was just a bit of a garage project, bit of a, hey, this could be interesting. And I guess, so what we're trying to achieve of it has morphed a little bit over time, and probably the episodes probably portray that a bit. If you listen to the older episodes, we probably didn't know where we were heading. But where it's kind of gone is more general discussions about property architecture and construction and the whole industry, because the whole industry is very integrated and you can't just separate. And I guess a lot of media is separated into, it's either architecture or it's construction. It's a bit fragmented and it's very sanitized. So we're kind of going, well, there's actually, it's one kind of living, breathing machine with a lot of moving parts. And actually a lot of what happens isn't what's in the media and isn't what's on podcasts. A lot of what happens is that unsanitized bit doesn't come to the surface very often. So the building industry that you see in the media is not normally the building industry that you experience. So we wanted to bring that experience to listeners.
Okay. And there's so many property podcasts out there. Why did you think the world needed another one?
I guess the honest answer is we just wanted to do one anyway initially, but I think it fitted in. To be fair, though, there wasn't really one that cut across like a horizontal line from real estate purchase to development and to planning, to architecture, construction, to any technical level. Yeah, you have your sort of mum and dad renovator shows. You have some things that are kind of like that, but nothing that really put all the pieces together and created something for the average listener. And of course, that's what it was set out to do. But there seems to be a lot of engineers and building professionals. I don't know, engineers particularly, I don't know why, but maybe they like to nerd out on podcasts. But yeah, I've spoken to a lot of building professionals who said, oh yeah, I've listened, you know, some of them said, I've listened to all the episodes.
To which I said,
are you okay? Like,
Well, I was going to ask you that, like, who are your listeners? Who is it aimed for?
Well, I think it's purely anyone who's interested in that whole story of how a property comes together and how development happens. But it's probably like draws on my experience, which is the smaller scale. So we're not really looking at large commercial projects or big infrastructure projects, apart from how those interact with homes and people's lives more on a granular level, but we don't kind of update people on what's happening with the local big projects, infrastructure projects. We're pretty focused on small builds. And again, in that space, there seems to be a lot about DIY, but we're not really a DIY. We're not going to tell you how to build a deck. We're more interested in why things happen, how things happen, why some buildings end up so crap and why other buildings are amazing, and what happens in that space to create that, and how does council and architects and designers and how that whole ecosystem works is the interesting bit for us.
Okay. Now, I know that you're quite a podcast fan. What are some of your favourites that have maybe inspired you?
Well, I think the ultimate enduring podcast is probably Freakonomics. But I also love, and this probably my sort of the geeky side, although I don't really, it's more about the people than what they're talking about. But the Verge cast is, they're in a world of their own. They're just the funniest. And a lot of their podcast is actually them laughing. And so you can't help but be drawn into it. But yeah, I just love anything with good storytelling. There's so many. But the ultimate storytelling podcast was probably Cautionary Tales. If anyone's ever listened to it, particularly the early episodes, were quite extraordinary and just so universally, I guess, relevant.
Yeah, great. So who have been some of your favourite guests so far or favourite episodes?
I think some that come to mind are probably, Andy Hoyne is a good mate of mine, but just such a fascinating guy. And most of the episode was about how we would circumvent council and build things on the street and do art installations and put a garden and not involve council. So it was a bit subversive and very openly. So that's always a good chat. If you ever want a good chat, talk to Andy Hoyne. I love having Matt Hasen, who's been a regular, and it's always very free flowing and easy.
And he's an agent with Cobden Hasen.
Yeah, he's the principal at Cobden Hasen, and he really just tells it how it is and spits it out, and it's again very unsanitized. Tells you about the ugly underside that you don't see, and so you get a lot out of it, and you learn a lot. Whereas maybe some other people that I've spoken to, it's hard to draw them out. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard because I'm going to forget some guests, maybe some guests that listen to all the episodes, and I'm going to feel bad. And I'm so all my guests were awesome.
You've done a lot, so they can't all be your favorites. Have there been any disasters?
Oh, look, just the early episodes. They're all slow train wrecks, I think. And I think one episode we had too many people, or we didn't realize that too many people probably wouldn't work, or there was an extra person that I didn't realize was going to be there. And
there was
I don't know, four or five people on the podcast, and everyone's talking over each other and they're not talking. And it's like, and I think that must be hard enough with a professional podcaster to manage. I don't know that we did a good job. I think that was a bit of a cacophony. But an interesting one was when we had a conversation, and I'm genuinely just not great with names, so I apologize in advance, but I should have done a bit of homework. But it was an architect that I was speaking to, and we set out to talk about contracts. We realized a solid half hour into the conversation that he was talking about architecture contracts and I was talking about construction contracts.
That definitely fits a bill for disaster.
Anyway, I don't know, we sort of rescued it somehow, but it was like, hang on a minute, you and I, we're talking, we're on a podcast talking about different things at the same time and confusing the crap out of everyone and ourselves.
Did that one go online?
Oh, they all went online. maybe some we should start pulling from our catalogue.
Okay. And do you know how many listeners you have?
No. We looked it up some time ago. I just I don't know why, but I don't want to know. And I'm not interested. Maybe because I'm, maybe subconsciously I can pretend like, oh, there's a lot and there's only like five. But I'm happier not knowing somehow. It's just another thing to measure. And it's not the spirit of Buildopedia. Like, it's just about good conversations. And you can measure too many things sometimes. But I don't know. I just decided, and now it's a bit silly, but I'm sticking to my guns. I'm like,
fair enough.
I don't care if there's five people or 100 people or whatever. I don't think there's a lot.
I guess when it goes viral and you start getting requests for interviews from all around the world, then you'll know it's a lot.
Well, I don't, you know, that's not why we're here, but whatever. If it goes viral, that will be weird, but I don't know that there's that many engineers.
And yeah, can you just tell me a little bit about yourself and what made you want to be a builder in the first place?
I think it was something as silly as I'd like to work outdoors. I think it was something really dumb on when you get to choose a career and there wasn't a rational. It was like, yeah, maybe that because I'd like to be outdoors. But I did fix things. I did build things. I remember building a deck for my parents. I remember paving. I remember doing, you know, whenever they needed stuff, I'd be the home handyman. Also did some stuff for their friends. And I've got one thing that you'll see if you come into our office is I've got a Master Builder's certificate sitting proudly on the bench, and it's a Master Builder's of Lego, which was in Grace Brothers, Mount Druitt, in something like 1982 or 84.
How old would you have been then?
I don't know, 6 or 7, I think. That just tells you how old I am.
Meant to be.
Yeah, yeah. But I've framed it, and that's the thing. That's my credentials. When people come in, they see that first.
So speaking of credentials, what other credentials do you have? How did you kind of train?
So how it came about was I went to uni, had to choose something, chose building, didn't get into it. So I wasn't a great student. I didn't get into it. I studied science for a year, and then I moved to building, ironically, at the time the entrance score for construction was a lot higher than applied physics, which I guess supply and demand, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to do well in, somehow I had to do well in applied physics to get into construction, which is,
that's bizarre.
It's just a bizarre kind of thing. But I think that year of studying physics, doing high level maths and doing that and having to do well to get into building, it was a good foundation, because whenever I was thinking about a problem in construction or a technical problem in construction, it was a physical problem. It was physics. So I found that was hugely helpful. And a lot of what I found around me was not physics-based thinking. It was very much belief-based. It was very much tradition, and this is how we do it. So that's what I've always pushed back against. It's like asking why, like a child, like, but why? why are you doing that? And physics is pretty simple. There's a few things you've got to remember. One, gravity. And two is that water follows gravity mostly, but also water pressure can do odd things. So a lot of building problems, if you just remember that water does odd things when under pressure, and gravity only goes one way.
It's the answer to everything.
The answer to almost everything.
I love it. And so then, you know, where did you go from there? How did you end up starting Ballast Point?
So I did most of my degree and started working for a small commercial business, which is the worst single professional experience of my life. It was just, and I'm not going to name the company, I'm not going to name the people, but oh my God, I can't remember how long I was there, probably 6 months. And they fired me eventually. So the conversation I had was, sort of went down in history a little bit, because the director pulled me in and he sort of said, look, it's like this. You work hard, you're honest, but look, the problem is, and he just paused and he's like, look, you're just not cunty enough. And he just, we'll beep that bit out. And then he's collected his thoughts and he's like, no, that's it. That's it. You're just not cunty enough.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, so I went, well, I guess I'm not. And I kind of, I don't know, when you're younger, you kind of go, well, that's me done with that industry because that's fucked and I don't want to know. So I then just thought about what else I could do. I almost had a degree and I ended up doing a year of outdoor rec, which I studied at Katoomba TAFE.
And you were in the outdoors?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'll say it was fantastic. It was amazing. I loved it. Loved the people. It just didn't pay. There was no money in it. And it was very disruptive. The best jobs in outdoor rec were on outdoor programs and particularly wilderness programs. Definitely the best job I've ever had in my life and definitely the worst paying job I've ever had in my life. And one day maybe I'll return to it. If I don't need any more money, maybe I'll go back because I really loved it. I loved taking kids out on wilderness programs. But it was not sustainable. I mean, it was like 24 hours a day of work for $150. And I guess you could save some money, but you couldn't pay a mortgage. You could save money if you weren't paying rent. And because you didn't have any opportunity to spend money when you're on a wilderness program. But yeah, it just wasn't sustainable. So then I worked for traveled, worked, did the usual, did the European trip, cycled around Southeast Asia. And then I came back and I was a bit homesick. I wanted to live in Sydney again. And I got a job with a guy called Chris Youngkin, still a good friend, still a very good mentor. And I just thought, well, he's a builder. I've got a qualification. I had my degree by then, had the bit of paper that I had to do, it took me a couple of years to do the paperwork to get, but I got there and I'm like, well, I'm qualified. So that's what I'll try and get a job in. And that opened the world onto architectural construction. And that was a very different thing with very different people in a very different environment. So that was very much an education in architecture as much as an education in construction. And that was over 20 years ago now. So I've been in architectural construction for quite a while. I know a thing or two. I know there's more that I don't know than what I do know, but I've really enjoyed architecture, really enjoyed as a builder, as a project manager, now as a business owner. It's that connecting with architecture and construction and understanding the full picture of why a development happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that is really interesting.
And that's what you've tried to really do with Ballast Point, isn't it? Like just meld the two together so it's more cohesive.
I think it was an experiment, but it resulted from, it was customer demand. It was just listening to customers. And when enough people asked me if I did design and construction, eventually I just said yes. And so we became an architectural practice and a construction business. Turns out that's what people want. Turns out they don't want one entity designing a home and another entity building it. And yeah, for many, many reasons, but it seemed to work. And putting it all together and understanding the client and their needs, that's what really became interesting.
And how old is Ballast Point now?
It started in 2015, so it's coming up to 9 years.
10-year anniversary next year.
10-year anniversary, yeah. So I guess if you can survive for 10 years as a building company, you're probably doing okay. But I think a lot of our success is just listening to customers and understanding that, well, what are their needs? they really do want one entity to deal with.
Yeah. And how has, like, the company changed and evolved over that time?
Well, it started as a licensed building company with Jeff, who at one point I bought out as a business partner, and now he's back as head of construction. So they're kind of like, if you walked in initially and then walked in now, it's sort of the same. There's just more people. And there's an architecture team. And Malik, who's one of our first employees, is still there, you know. So he started as a site laborer, he's now a site manager. So, yeah, if you kind of go, oh, nothing's changed, and yet everything's changed because we fully integrate. And the most important thing of any project is the team. So that's what we've tried to build.
Great. And you're based in Balmain. You also live in Balmain, don't you? How long have you lived in Balmain for?
Well, I live in Rozelle, technically, but...
the border.
The Balmain, but the Balmain end of Rozelle. But how long? It's been 12 years, but I've lived in the inner west for 20 years. So
yeah,
even longer, actually. Yeah, I'm probably almost 30 years since I've lived in the inner west. But yeah, I like Balmain. I like walking to work. I couldn't imagine driving to work. I do drive to work occasionally when I'm in a hurry or I've got to bring something. And then a few days later, I'm like, I get out and I need to drive somewhere. I can't find my car. And I realize that it's Thursday. And on Monday, I left my car somewhere near the office.
Oh, no.
And I just click. And anyway, but that's a good problem. Like, means that it doesn't happen every week. But it has happened a few times where,
and you, yeah, luckily Balmain is not the kind of area that you go back and the cars burn out or not there.
No, I don't know that there are that many areas where you anticipate your car to be burnt out, but I guess, yeah, I guess where you park, if you parked it out in a paddock somewhere, sure, but I don't know, I think there's not too many places like that. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe there are. I don't know where they are, but maybe we live in a bubble. Who knows?
It's a good bubble. So tell me, yeah, what's next with Buildopedia? What are your hopes and dreams?
Hopes and dreams? Look, early on it was just about becoming less shit. And we had a few guests who didn't want to go on initially. I mean, early on, we were like, okay, we're going to have guests. Who should we get first? What order should they come in? And then it was like, well, who can we get? Who will actually come on? I think I'm keen to, yeah, really get more in the weeds of construction, not in the weeds in a tedious sense, but more into, I guess, the underbelly. I really want to unpack what's happening, why things happen the way they happen. I would love to focus more on, well, the future of construction as well, and where are we heading, where are we and where are we heading. So I think that's probably, yeah, what I want to focus more on. I mean, look, it's hard to attract people to come on your podcast, but I think it's kind of, we felt like this year it's changed a little bit and that people are more interested than they used to be. I guess when you've got enough podcasts under your belt, you become more attractive somehow as a platform. So I think we really want to unpack construction, architecture. We really want to delve in and explore things that aren't really in architectural media or construction media, where it's all about new technology and here's what I've built. Isn't it awesome? Yes, it's awesome. Not everything is awesome. And yeah, we're definitely, there's things there that just don't seem right, like construction and carbon pollution. And no matter where you sit on carbon pollution and global warming, no matter how bad you think it is, things just don't add up because of the volume of emissions in construction and related to construction. So there's things that really don't make sense that I'd love to explore in the industry. Where's it going? Where's it going to end? But yeah, that's where I'm hoping to take it.
Great. Sounds like there's some interesting episodes ahead then.
Yeah, interesting. And one thing that I know about construction is it's the backwater for innovation. So understanding why that is definitely something that's interesting. And exploring why, what is the way forward? Because I don't think modular homes is the way forward. I mean, it's one of those things that comes up every 10 years and becomes topical. But who knows? Maybe modular homes is the solution. I just don't, you know, there's economics and physics and I don't understand how it stacks up. But yeah, I'm happy to be open-minded. So yeah, I think that's it. That's what it is. It's an exploration. And we'll keep exploring.
Excellent.
Cool. Well, Ange, thanks so much for joining us. And we'll check in again soon and see where we've come to. So
no problem.
So you've been listening to Buildopedia with Angela Serene, good friend, professional journalist, and friend of Buildopedia, friend of Ballast Point. Thanks for joining us, Ange.
All right.
You've been listening to Buildopedia. Please remember to like us and share our episode with your friends. We'd love your comments and suggestions. And we have a new website, buildopedia.au, where you can get in touch or leave a question and check out our blog.